Hello, friends and brothers. This is Justin Jones with the Masonic Improvement Broadcast, joined with Dennis Yates.
Friends, brothers, thank you so much for having us. Thank you for taking the time and caring enough to listen to programs like this, not just ours, but others. This is where a lot of us get our light when we're feeling at our darkest, when we're traveling down that lonesome highway from town to town, trying to get to that next lodge. So I can appreciate you. I appreciate what you do. I'm a listener myself. I enjoy many podcasts and I appreciate you tuning into ours, as well as watching our YouTube channel.
Absolutely.
How's that? How's that?
That sounds fantastic. Almost pre-planned.
Fabulistic.
We have
There's nothing pre-planned about me.
we got Brad Hoff and Josh Kovar. You wanna say hello real quick or
Hello, how's everybody doing tonight?
well, I'm
Howdy,
fine.
coming live from Roy City.
Roy
Nice.
City. Nice.
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 And
So
Josh
the
is from Goliad, and we got Oscar. We don't know where he's traveling right now, but we know he's traveling because he's a traveling man.
He's on the
Well,
road.
in Beaumont right now, headed out back home to the valley.
Southeast.
Very
Southeast.
nice. The theme for this evening is
Okay.
esotericism. And I think I don't see any reason why this could become its own like its own segment. We've been talking about another one we'll be adding soon. Why not talk about esoteric stuff? And
It
so
needs to, yes.
it needs to, yeah. So the focus of this evening, what Dennis and I talked about, is we're going to start with the EA degree and talk about the symbolism that really resonates with us. Any lessons that we learned that maybe not strictly tied to symbolism, but have maybe like an esoteric tie to it. And then next time we do this, we'll focus on Fellowcraft, and then we'll do Master, and then we'll see where the road leads us at that point. Then again, we might
Yes.
touch on something tonight that we may say, hey, this thing's its own exploration, so we might just do that. But that's how the map looks right now. And if we do any side quests along the way, we'll just see what brings us. So with
I would
that,
like to go ahead.
no, you know, I was about to open it up. So what's up?
Oh, open it up.
We're opened up.
Okay.
What are you gonna say?
Boom, boom, boom. Okay, we're open. I'd like to say that, a lot of what's bringing this on is the fact that there's a symposium coming up, and it's a really esoteric-minded get together of brothers talking on the different things that are striking us as important within the lessons of Masonry. And I would like to give this lineup, and this is this Saturday, by the way, in San Antonio at Triune Lodge. The tickets are only $50. 50 or 60? I can't see. I'm getting too old. They're only
Either way, that's a good
$50.
deal.
Yeah, that's a hell of
That's
a deal because you have Robert, or actually, let me start it this way. You have Right Worshipful Roberto M. Sanchez, past Grand Master of Mexico. Right Worshipful Brad S. Billings, past Grand Master of Texas. Robert Park, who is one of the education committee of San Antonio Scottish Rite and part of, I think it's civil law in for the Grand Lodge of Texas. Larry Fitzpatrick, who was on the education committee for 15 years. He's on every, not 15 years, just a little less than that. But he's been on every other committee in the world for Grand Lodge. Nobody can get enough of Larry because he is one of the most intelligent men in Texas. And he has helped our Grand Lodge tremendously over the years, as well as Chris Williams. He was also the chairman and education member of the Scottish Rite. Bradley Kohanke, who used to be the personal representative of our valley and who now lives in Arkansas. So, there's that. But we still
nobody's
love him.
perfect.
Right. We still love him. God bless him. Or bless his heart. We'll just
Here,
say
I
it
was
that
thinking the same thing.
way. And then the one, the only, David Hill from Austin, Texas, who is a renowned psychologist as well as one of the he and Robert Park are probably the two most knowledgeable esoteric minds in tarot, Kabbalah, Hermeticism. These guys really, if you ever have a question, these are the guys you go to in Texas. Mm-hmm. And then myself, I'll be the last person that's there. Oh, wait, in Carlos Cantu, our host, he's going to give a presentation as well. So this is a really good lineup for a really good event. If you are anywhere within, you know, an hour or two from San Antonio, I strongly recommend you go there. Now, if you live south of San Antonio and you're within an hour and a half of Goliad, you should go there because that's where the Grand Master is going to be. And that's where I would expect you to be if you didn't have prior commitments like myself. So anyways, getting that out there, that's what kind of spurred this thought of, you know, these segments of esoteric talks on the tenets and working tools and the things that we're supposed to be learning in our degrees. And so, Justin, go ahead and take it away and explain a little bit more on this, and then let's get this show on the road.
Well, just kind of hitting on that real quick, like really, Masonic Improvement, when it was founded, it kind of hit, we hit our stride with administrative things almost, and it wasn't intentional, but that's just really kind of where we landed with everything, because it's kind of like OLT, like it seems basic when you go there, but so many people don't know a lot of these things. And so that's just where we hit our stride, and we're not deviating from that. We're still definitely going to be talking about the important stuff, the day-to-day stuff with the lodge. But as you grow as a Freemason, you get more interested in the esoterics very often. And Dennis is already there, and I've fallen down that rabbit hole too. And so that means a lot of y'all are probably interested in the same thing. And so that's kind of what we're doing. We're starting off with the EA tonight, because that's where everybody starts off, right? And we'll see where things take us. I don't know how deep we'll eventually go. I want to go pretty deep, but Dennis is like, whoa, 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 man, we're not doing that yet. So we'll just see how it.
We're not going to go that deep, but we will go pretty deep. We will go pretty deep. And in fact, you'll be able to touch on that some of the stuff.
Yeah, actually, I was, there was some stuff I read that I thought I'd wrote notes on that I didn't, that was regarding that. But regarding, if we go into the cardinal virtues, we definitely can. So it's just something I want to talk about, because that's actually one of my favorite parts of the EA. So unless you had something, actually, I'll just jump into that and we'll just see where we go.
I dig it, man. I love cool. The cardinal virtues.
So what's interesting to me about all of the degrees, we're talking about the EA here, is when you start like researching like what these guys are actually talking about for the lectures, and you're reading the monitor, no one's taught the cardinal virtues today. And there's no explanation, like a really deep explanation for a lot of these things, because at their inception, with a well-rounded education, you were just assumed that you would have learned about these things at some point. And a liberal education is not what a liberal education was back in the 16, 1700s. I mean, now liberal education is just going to college. But back in the day, you actually studied the liberal arts.
So, yeah, going to college and being able to use pronouns as our name. That's liberal today.
But
not that there's anything wrong with that, folks. I'm just saying.
That's a rabbit hole we are not ready for.
Yes, that's... but what I'm saying, though, is that, you know, today education is not the same as education in the past. Today,
right.
It's more about cultural issues and cultural relevance as opposed to traditional lifelong lessons that we need to learn and being prepared for the world in general, in work and life.
So the cardinal virtues, they were actually, I don't have the Bible verse, I had it written down, but they were first identified in the Bible, and they were later applied towards Freemasonry. But that said, like even then, like these cardinal virtues, even though they're mentioned in the Bible and they found their place in like the Catholic Church and everything, they predate that too. Like we're talking about, these are like Greek, ancient, these are ancient concepts it's just they're modernized and they're applied more towards the church, and the verbiage that we use to refer to them has changed also. However, cardinal is the word that was adopted when it was adopted by the church. And I believe it's Latin. It's Latin for hinge, right? Because everything was believed to hinge on these. So when they're talking about the cardinal virtues in the EA degree, that's why it's one of the first things that you're learning, because everything applies to this. You can't start to build yourself up as a person, as a man, until you have began taking these virtues and applying the lessons from them to your life. Does anyone have any thoughts on that? I don't want to just dominate the conversation here.
Well, that's true. Well, let's see. So really, they originally came from Plato and Aristotle, and then the church kind of adopted them into their world. And here's the reason why is because religion through the years kind of applies truths to culture, to the current culture. And so when the Catholics took on I gotta be careful what I say here. When the Catholics decided that they were going to be the influence of the world that they are or were of the day, they kind of took some of these ideals and culturalistic sayings and teachings that were already present in the day to day, and they applied them to Christianity and applied Christianity to them so that the people would be able to understand, you know, these lessons that they were trying to teach, pretty much. That's kind of how things evolve over time. It's just like now we have all of our churches that are non-denominational churches that, you know, they take more and more of the culture around them and incorporate it into the lessons of God in order to teach the word, right? And so it's always been that way. And so the church adopted a lot of these cardinal virtues from Plato and Aristotle back in the day, and it went on from there. You're absolutely right.
Well, as a side note, I mean, that's not, it's not strictly esoteric, but we're kind of into weeds there. So let's not beat around the bush on this. So with a religion, if you're going into a new area, if you want to be accepted and people are like, hey, we got this flood myth, you're like, oh yeah, we have this flood myth too. And it's just a rehash of their stuff. And also when they say, well, we have this God that, I don't know, drives all the, does this thing with snakes or something, I don't know. Then you say, oh yeah, that's a saint in our religion, a saint, right? Not Satan, but a saint. And so you kind of adopt these things, as you're trying to reach out to other people. And it's the same thing with adopting things that are really old. Like we said, the cardinal virtues predate the Catholic Church, but it's easy to say, oh yeah, that's a Catholic Church thing, when it predates the church by thousands of years. But now you add some authenticity to what you're doing. You have some leverage,
street cred.
Some street cred, because you can say, well, we're much older, because these are concepts that are much older than anything you know about. So it's not unheard of.
Can I say something real quick?
What?
Can I say something real quick?
Absolutely.
I just wanted to say, you know, when you said a cardinal is Latin for hinge, mm-hmm. You ever been hunting? Or anybody ever been hunting? And the first bird that comes out is a cardinal. Whenever it goes from dark to light, the first bird that comes out is a cardinal, and then the last bird that you see before dark is a cardinal.
Well, that's interesting.
That was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
very interesting. Huh.
Yeah. So I didn't know that. I have been.
No, I didn't either.
I didn't know that. Yeah, that's the esoterics of hunting, guys. You will not learn that on Duck Dynasty. You only learn it on Masonic Improvement.
I don't want to go too in the weeds on this because this is what Dennis said he didn't want to get too far into, but just kind of as a point of interest. If you look at, if someone was interested in like tarot, for example, if you look at the trumps in, I'm reading my notes here, the trumps in the deck of tarot, you have fortitude, temperance, prudence, and justice. So you had the four cardinal virtues, and each of those virtues, each of those trumps has cards under it that are aspects of that virtue. And so that's a whole other concept for a whole other day, I think. But just something to put on your radar. If Gareth Knight writes some very interesting books about tarot, if that's something that's interesting to you, and he goes into detail on that. But I'll just put that out there for y'all.
Nice. So the essence of prudence, let's start with that
one. Sure.
The essence of prudence is wisdom, right? And when we think of prudence on a quick thought, we're thinking of caution, being keeping one of our tenets that we're taught, or one of the lessons that we're taught, is keeping our passions within due bounds, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we think of prudence, we tend to think about things like that. But what we don't realize is that it's not necessarily being cautious that we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is just not get overexcited over anything in particular, to where we might lose the focus of what the meaning is in that thing. So the wisdom comes from a cautious approach into a subject and not being overzealous to where you skip past all this other meaning, getting to this one message that you think that, you know, that's the whole message of the story, where actually there was all this in between that you skipped right on over. That's mm-hmm. prudence. It's not really being like when we were kids, we called people a prude or whatever. It's not being, you know, overly cautious. It's being careful not to emit part of the journey, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the notes I took over the cardinal virtues for a presentation, and it's basically what you're saying. So Aristotle defined prudence, basically translates as the right reason applied to practice, which means, you know, making the best decision possible with the time that you have available while taking the consequences into account. So, I mean, yeah, you're spot on with exactly what I have.
Yeah, I'm just layman's terms.
Yeah.
I'm just the roundabout. I'm getting there.
Well, we just did prudence. Let's do the other three. Does anyone have any thoughts on prudence before we move on? No.
Okay.
All right.
Temperance. Let's save justice for last. Yes. Temperance.
Okay. Temperance is also known as being sound-minded. I'm just looking at my notes. Plato thought it was the most important virtue. And often, historically, temperance was associated with, I don't remember the exact verbiage because I wrote the exact verbiage down, but it's like knowing your cups, basically, which means it's concerned with drinking and knowing your limits to avoid becoming belligerent.
Of the restraint, not prudence, but the temperance. That's more of your restraint lesson.
And this is way more important historically than it is today. Today we have clean drinking water. Anciently, the safest liquid to consume was usually alcohol in some form, wine or beer, because the fermenting process killed a lot of that harmful bacteria and created nutrients. And so
nutrients. Mm-hmm. Wow. I need nutrients.
Before the process that we have today where we pasteurize all the alcohol, it actually destroys a lot, it denatures those nutrients. But yeah, real beer, for example, that is made and hasn't been pasteurized, it has a lot of nutritional value in it, and that's where most, like, the peasants historically would actually get most of their nutritional value, was from the beer and the wine and the things that they would consume, not necessarily from the food they would eat.
And scotch has many different minerals and herbs combined to give this the distinct flavors and give those nutrients that every good growing boy needs.
I think a good scotch pasteurizes itself. but you know, and what's interesting is you have these like these breweries and stuff, and a lot of them take pride in the source of their water. Like, it might have be really rich in, like, a certain mineral, or it might be from, like, an aquifer that, or from glaciers or something. That's because that adds to the nutritional value, which affects the flavor. And that's what made it so popular. A lot of those are, like, really old, like hundreds of years old breweries. And that's because they were so popular, because they are providing extra nutritional value. And so people that lived around it and consumed it would be healthier.
Right. Right. Well, it definitely created wisdom. I felt it as I drank it just then.
So getting wiser every time, huh?
Yes. Yeah, so in my temperance, I was able to gain a little bit of prudence.
Okay. But temperance also can apply to any. So we talk about keeping our passions within due bounds, right? Temperance applies to that as well. Excess of, like, food and sex, anything like that, which is good in moderation. Anything that it, and I'm just talking about anything at all that is good in moderation, once you start doing that in excess, becomes harmful to you. And so this is the application of that, keeping yourself in due bounds. A beer or two a day, probably not bad for you in most cases. A beer or two when you wake up in the morning and just continuing that throughout the day, that's bad.
Food, the dog, buddy.
Yeah, food. You have to have food. You have to have it to survive. A big breakfast, probably not a bad thing. But a big breakfast, a big brunch, a big lunch, a big second lunch, if you're a hobbit, big dinner, that's going to come and get you. So temperance in those are just a few examples, but you could probably apply that to most things in your life.
Right. Yeah, it's basically self-control, and even Plato referenced temperance as sound-mindedness. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it means, is that you're, and that's one of the things that we make sure that people are sound in mind and members when they join the lodge. You know, that's part of that, and that's why. If nobody knows why that's asked, that's why. Because there's no way you'd be able to maintain and pursue the excellence in the cardinal virtues if you are not sound in mind and faculties. I won't say mind and members, to make it more relatable, your mm-hmm. mind and faculties. Put it that
but
way.
But also an excess represents weakness that can be exploited. And so I don't want to get too much into, like, saying, well, you don't want to tell the secrets, because, I mean, I'm reading Chris Williams' book right now, and, like, he didn't think secrets are, like, a thing. But, like, you're in Germany in the 1940s when Freemasons started to become sought after, right? By, I won't name parties, right? Because I don't want to get YouTube paying attention too much. But in Germany in 1940s, we know what happened, and Freemasons were one of the targets. If you have a weakness for alcohol or gluttony or sex, that could be exploited, and then all of a sudden the wrong people know, hey, these are where all the rosters are for the members in the lodge, or something like that. And it sounds like, and I realize what it sounds like. It sounds like I'm being dramatic, but historically this has happened, and it's something that could historically, not historically, but it could happen again. If it's happened in the past, there's a reason it can't happen in the future. And so avoiding excess means that you have less means for people to get to take advantage of that, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, if you think about the back in the day with all the mobs, I mean, I'm sure it happens today, and it happens with gangsters and, you know, the street thugs and stuff like that. That's the whole way that they gain control of their environments around them, is to exploit the weaknesses of the people. So let's say that you're in a community that's heavily addicted to heroin or crack or whatever. You're selling that right and left because you're taking control of your community, and you keep control of the community with that. And it's just, that goes all the way, well, from the beginning of time, I'm sure. But, you know, in recent times that we know, back when the country was first founded, and then, you know, of course, a little bit later as the cities were born and the Industrial Revolution came along, and then we started having all these immigrants come in, and they would separate into these different factions. Well, one of the ways that they kept control over these certain areas of the cities is by the leaders within those groups took control of the heartstrings of the people, and the fact that they only knew one language, and the fact that they kind of, a lot of them were paid for when they came over. And so they were able to keep control of their communities through those different weaknesses of the folks that were coming over. These are weaker people looking for a way out of hardship in the mother country. They come over here, they find hardship here because they're under the rule of somebody, you know, closer to them in their communities, and the fact that they didn't know any other languages, and the fact that they didn't have any connections over here, that's what led them to be held in control in the different parts of New York and other major cities. That was the way that they were able to manipulate the system.
Interesting.
They came over for freedom, and they didn't have freedom because they couldn't speak the language.
Do you want to hop into, you said you want to do justice last?
Yes, but you haven't done fortitude.
I was going to say, do you want to cover fortitude, and I'll follow up on it?
Well, fortitude is strength, courage. When the chips are down, you just find this something deep inside that allows you to stand your ground when nobody else will. That's fortitude. Mm-hmm. When the right thing needs to be done and nobody else is willing to do it, and you're willing to step up and do that, that's fortitude, in mm-hmm. my opinion.
Fortitude brings to mind the drama of the third degree, which I know we're talking about the first degree, but that's what it brings to mind. Hold on a second.
Well, every one of them are interconnected, so it doesn't hurt to do that. It doesn't hurt to bring it up, that's for sure.
Fortitude is is all of the virtues together at their testing point, like that courage to go through and do all of them.
Wow, like, man. Yeah, I like that a lot too.
I heard this guy say that. I'm just repeating stuff that I read, but that was something I wrote down.
I like really... that though. Yeah, that's
well, all of us grow by the things that we read and come across. So it's, you're not stealing it from anybody. Don't feel bad.
No, I mean, I don't think I've ever shared anything that I haven't read or studied somewhere. Yeah, right.
Just every one of our, in fact, oh, that's part of my talk, is how the whole everything. Yeah, we'll leave it at that. Go ahead.
No. Did you have anything else?
There was one thing on temperance. It's like making a decision to abstain or to moderate in reference to having some kind of fixed end or a goal that you're trying to achieve or something like that. Using temperance for that value to achieve goals.
I see. There you go. Interesting. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's being able to,
the goal is to sustain yourself, not necessarily to just eat until you can't eat anymore. Or
well, being able to create goals in itself mm-hmm. is a form of temperance, because most people live their lives nowadays without goal setting and without planning and without so that's a important aspect that we didn't touch on that we should have, that you know, life is only going to be as good as we make it. And if we don't plan for things and don't have goals and can't dream the big dreams and put a plan into action to get there, we'll never achieve those things. So there's nothing more important than being able to formulate goals.
So if we're, as long as we're talking about this, we're kind of down this esoteric rabbit hole, right? And I don't want to take away from your talk, but the I keep saying the ancients. It's not necessarily an ancient concept, but a lot of these things are. It's called the Wheel of Fortune, and it's not talking about the TV show. It's most depictions are of like this wheel, and at the very bottom, you have people on the wheel often, and at the very bottom, there's like fire or something really unpleasant, and then at the top, everything's great for this person. And it's this concept that we all go through this wheel of fortune. Some people are born at the bottom, some people are born at the top, but everybody goes through this wheel of fortune in their lifetime. And it's not so much a result of fate. Where you're born at, you could say that's fate, but it's not something you can help. But it's often a result of the decisions you make. And so just because you're up at the very top, going to the very, if you're born rich, for example, going to the bottom of that wheel of fortune doesn't necessarily mean you go bankrupt. It just means that sometimes things are bad. But if you make bad decisions, sure, you could be bankrupt. But if you make good decisions, it might just be you didn't get that business deal you didn't want. But everybody in life goes through this wheel of fortune. They have their ups and downs, and it's the decision we make. And it was like I was talking to you earlier, like, it's not about luck. Luck's not, it's not like there's this like this deity called luck that just randomly blesses people and randomly curses other people. And like all the rich people have them in their pocket and all the poor people made them mad somehow. That's not how reality works. It's about decisions. Rich people don't live in fear, right? They're willing to take chances. People that often are not as well off or have a lot more fear. They're not as willing. They're more adverse to taking any kind of chances like that. And often that's a result of what they were taught. But it's all comes down to,
is that what you're saying?
No, I don't know. But
we were talking about that earlier.
Yeah. But so I'm just saying we have that wheel of fortune. And it's not about where you're born or what resources you have necessarily so much as the decisions you make day to day over a long period of time that determines your outcome of your life.
Okay, I'm going to let somebody else talk before I go down this rabbit. Any takers? Any takers? Okay. So we were talking earlier, and this is the basis of part of my discussion that I'm going to have on Saturday, that everything is manifestation. We're taught through the church that everything is fate, or everything that God has a plan for all of us. And if something happened, that was God's plan, right? I absolutely disagree with that. I think it's nothing could be further from the truth. And the reason why is because of the spirit God gave us and the mind that God gave us. Our mind and conscience is developed by reading and understanding through wisdom, right? Through education, through time, through experience. All of these things that happen to us throughout life have manifested whatever we're in right now. The world that we are in right at this moment is all a manifestation of what has happened to us accumulatively through our life. Every experience ever, every hurt, every joy, everything that has ever happened to us, it formed in our mind and conscience the belief system that we had to make the decisions to put us where we are today, right? And so, in essence, that is free will. That is free will. God's perfect will is from our free will. You've heard me say it before, but I've never really defined it like that so that people could understand what I mean by the chaos in our lives. The chaos in our free will is the perfection in God's will, because God gave us the ability to manifest these things. And don't start thinking I'm part of some occult or late night infomercial or anything like that.
He
right?
watched The Secret before he got on.
Right, exactly. but there's a truth to that. That is one of the great secrets in this world, that we actually, the reason why we are made in God's image is because we manifest our own destiny, as does God.
Mm-hmm.
First, there was nothing.
Reality.
Yes, yes. First, there was nothing, and then through the word, which we've talked about before, I believe is vibration, through the word, matter occurred, and the world started being built from there. The cosmos started being built from there. That's intelligent manifestation at work. And I think
Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you. I was just gonna say, as you're speaking, I was thinking I used to have a really close friend. Like, we were almost like brothers. Like, we knew each other since middle school, through high school, college, went into the Air Force together. I did 4 years and he did 6 years. So I got out before he did. And he got in the habit of smoking pot and stuff while he was in the military. And he came out, he came back, and like compulsively all day, every day, just smoking, like way past temperance, like we're talking about. And he rode a motorcycle. And so he got on his motorcycle high one day, got on 35, had an accident, almost killed him. He got brain damage and all this stuff from it. Anyway, so I remember he's at my house one day, like he recovered. Not 100% ever, never 100%, but he was talking about how Satan did this to him. Satan made him have his accident. And I was like, no, I don't think it was Satan. He's like, well, you think it was God then? He's like, I don't think it was anything. I think it was the fact that you were smoking pot all day, every day, and brought a motorcycle and got on I-35 and had an unfortunate accident. We're not friends anymore after that.
But that's so funny.
But it's the result of your actions. If you do too many stupid things at once, it's going to bite you in the butt. Right?
Yeah.
One stupid thing
like
bites you in the butt.
I hate that saying that Satan did this or Satan did that or Satan's in this or Satan's in that. I hate that more than anything, because the reality is that if we believe that God is the Almighty, then God was the maker of all things, and Satan is part of God, and God is part of Satan. It's all one being, ultimately. And that's the balance in all things that we have to understand. And it's not Satan controlling us. It's our stupid bad behaviors controlling us, and our lack of temperance and fortitude and prudence.
Well, it's classic victim mentality at that point. It's not anything I did. I'm a victim of the devil. He did it to me. He pushed me over on my motorcycle, even though I was high and hit a bad spot on the road. And with the issue with the victim mentality is you can never improve yourself, because you can't improve something that's not your fault. If you make a mistake, you can correct it and not do it again. But if you're a victim, well, it doesn't matter what I do. It's just going to keep happening. And so you never get out of that rut you're in. That's why, and I'm not trying to pick on any particular demographic, but that's why you have high poverty families that tend to have high poverty children and so on and so forth, because they have that same mentality. They raise their kids with this victim mentality, and they're always a victim. And so they never try to do anything because, or if they do try and it fails, it's not their fault.
It's somebody else's
fault. They can never pull themselves out of it. It's like if I'm trying to climb out of a hole and I miss a rock and I fall, well, I'm a victim. The devil made me fall. It's not because I need to try again and like pick a different handhold or something.
Right. That's the essence of generational poverty. That's what creates that. And I feel bad, you know, a couple of white guys here on the show saying something like that, but that is the reality. And I'm going to tell you that
I don't come from a rich family.
I'm going to tell you that a lot of people don't know this, but when I was a kid, I lived in Section 8 housing. Now I own apartments and properties, but I came from the lowest of the low when I was a kid. So it's not that I had the silver spoon, and the color of my skin didn't make any difference. I was on the streets when I was 14 years old. A lot of people don't know that, but that's the reality. I was, and I got out. When I was 15, I went to Florida with a guitar in my hand on the Greyhound bus. No joke. I was that guy that was just trying to figure out a way in life. I did. It was down to my butt. I had long hair. I was going to be the next rock and roll star. And I failed miserably and came back. I failed miserably and came back to Texas. So long story short, you know, we are only victim to ourselves and what we're able to accomplish by our determination, fortitude, you know, the stuff that we're talking about. If we are able to apply those principles, those cardinal virtues in our life, then we know to go to school, to get that education. We know to serve a proper time in a job and gain some wisdom and understanding in that position before we move up or try to move up. Because then if we try too soon and we're rejected, then we're saying, oh, it's this guy's fault. He didn't like me, blah, blah, blah. It's always something else, right? No, it's because we weren't properly trained and we didn't have the experience and understanding that it takes to really do that job. And it's all manifested reality that we create because we're either impatient or we are patient and we are studious and working towards the goal. We have a plan and then we end up making that goal. Mm-hmm. You look at all the CEOs of the world and they didn't get there by chance. They got there by calculated and intentional methods and now they're there and now they have to work 10 times harder to stay there because you've got 1,000 other people trying to go for your same job because they all want the same thing. So you have to be even higher on the top of your game to stay there. So it's all a matter of manifested reality. Absolutely. Go ahead.
I mean, I was just saying you could look at, because we talk about poverty, and be clear, like, I'm not thinking about, like, race or anything. I think about, like, my dad's side of the family when I was growing up. Like, that was, like, fried bologna, and I spent a lot of time over there, right? I saw that mentality. I know what it's like. And my dad escaped from it, and, like, I didn't grow up rich by any means still, but I know what that's like. But I want to talk about the other, because we're talking about, like, this poverty mentality. Let's talk about the other end. You can have someone that's just born with a silver spoon in their mouth, and if they're not,
and they're morally bankrupt.
Well, that, but also you assume just because they're born with that, they get that their entire lives. They can lose that if they don't make. Likewise, if you don't have money, you make the right decisions, you can get out of that. If you make the bad decisions with a ton of money, you're down there too. It flips. It's the same lesson. I don't know if y'all have heard about it, but it was like a story. The lottery was a big deal and people would talk about it. You have families and they'd win like $5 million. Well, they win all this money and then they'd end up bankrupt and more in debt than they were before they had it. And that's because just because they have the money doesn't mean that it's going to solve all the problems, because they don't know how to make the right decisions and manifest the right kind of reality that allows them to keep that basically. Because if you're still living with the same mindset that kept you in poverty, it's going to keep you in poverty no matter how much money you throw at it. But if you have a mindset, yes. If you live with the same mindset that makes somebody rich, it doesn't matter how much money you take away. And I've seen it. Like, it was like Grant Cardone. He did like this challenge where he had to like start on the street and see how much money he could raise or something. And people like that, they pop back. They make money because they have that mentality. And
they're not afraid to fail.
Yeah.
That's another thing is that, you know, that's something I was telling you earlier is that, you know, I'm just plain ass stupid and not afraid to fail. I keep going. And that's, I've never been lucky in my life. I've been willing to take the risks that nobody else is willing to take. And so in doing that, I failed miserably a few times. And a few times I have truly come out great. So
hey, I like Mike Tyson, but he's not rich because he's smart, right? Because he's not afraid. That's why, because he's not
that's
afraid.
Exactly right. Yes, and that's why he's got the next big fight coming, because
of course,
he's old
if
and
I was
still
built
not
like
afraid.
Tyson, if I was built like Tyson, I probably wouldn't be afraid either, but I'm just saying. No. But that's because he worked out. He could have just as easily been a fast
That's because he manifested his reality, made it happen. He didn't decide that his speech impediment was going to hurt him, and he didn't decide that his poverty was going to hurt him. He found a way to get out of it, and he did it, and God bless him for it. You know,
he's going to wreck this dude, too.
I know.
It's going to be glorious. But anyway.
Did you see that? Did you see that post that showed them both at 19 years old or something like that? One was a dinky little kid, looked like I did when I was a kid, and the other one looks like this bulldog mass of a human chunk of flesh. And that's Mike Tyson. It's like, oh my gosh, this kid's gonna die.
Not to get too far on a sidetrack here, but if anyone has ever watched, it's called the It Man series. It's a series of movies about the dude that basically trained, Bruce Lee. It basically trained Bruce Lee. Anyway, it kind of goes off. It kind of gets a little crazy, but anyway, my point is, it was like the third or fourth movie in Mike
I'm
Tyson.
Glad there's a point.
Mike Tyson is the antagonist in the movie, and he's already been retired for who knows how long at this point.
Right.
And there's a scene where
or after the face tattoo?
It was after, but he puts his hands up and he starts coming at this guy, and like just watching the way he moved at this dude scared the crap out of me. Like this guy, even when he was like retired and not boxing, watching him move, I would not want to be in front of that dude. I'm just saying.
I agree. Thank God I have not manifested myself into that position to be in front of that fist at the wrong time. That's for sure.
But we'll move on from this. I think we'll talk about justice. But that's why prayer is so important. Like, regardless of what your real of your personal beliefs, when you speak things like. If reality is created by a word, that means it was created by vibration, right? And we know reality is vibrations. So when you speak the things that you're thankful for and the things that you want in life, you're speaking that into reality. You're adding that vibration to reality. And it that's why prayer is so powerful, because you're showing universe, God, whatever you believe, you're showing that these are the things I'm grateful for. I want more things like that. These are the things I really want. Please give me those things. These are the things that I want to be protected from. And the universe, in my experience, personal experience, responds accordingly. And if it didn't, prayer probably would never have caught on, and we still wouldn't be doing it thousands of years later.
Right.
It's powerful.
Well, to that note, being off of prayer, let's go to a different thought that, you know, just being on this show generates a mindset for me and creates a sharpness about me that I'm always prepared to speak on almost any topic that comes up. If it's Masonic in nature, I'm prepared at all times. And it's not because I just talked about this within a few days, but because I continue to talk about different topics all the time, day in and day out, through the show and through the presentations that I give. You know, I noticed that once I started doing presentations and making myself available to visit lodges and so forth, the more I was willing to do, the more that came at me. And now it really is an issue to where I am double booked and triple booked on some days trying to keep up with my speaking engagements. I mean, Brother Hoff, you see this, you know, firsthand, because you've asked me to come up and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to figure it out. Please let me figure it out. I'll get up there, I promise you. And I will before the end of the year. I will after you're installed, I will be up there. Do not doubt that one bit. But the reality is that the better I got at it, well, the more I did it, the better I got at it, the more the opportunities came because people saw how good I was getting at it. And it's the same thing with anything else. And it's just time, patience, fortitude, temperance, prudence, all of the cardinal virtues put together that makes this possible. And I think it's the same with Justin and anyone else who is heavy into masonry. Let's look at our leaders in the Grand Lodge, at the Grand Lodge level. They're doing masonry every day. They're not taking breaks like the rest of us do. They're doing it every day. They live it, they breathe it, and they sometimes wish they could get away from it, but they can't. They're there, they're in it to win it, and they're going to. And that's why they're there, because they manifested that into their life. A lot like us, we travel a lot, we meet a lot of people, go see other grand jurisdictions, what have you, you know, all the appendant bodies, all this kind of stuff. So through that constant care in developing ourselves, it creates this future that we actually had complete control in manifesting. That it was never by chance, and it was never anybody else. Mm-hmm. I hate to say this on the air because it's going to get some of the nut jobs crazy.
They're already crazy. It's all right.
But it's not even a manifestation of God's will onto us. Because the same thing, like I said earlier, the same thing that created God is what we're made of. And if that's the case, we're one with God at all times. And if we're doing what we're meant to be doing, we're doing it with our own free will, but that is God's will, mm-hmm. right? So it's not that just begging God to get something is going to get it, right? It's through our own work and perseverance that we're going to make that happen. And that would be God's will in action by seeing that result happen.
Yep.
I truly believe that.
No, I mean, if you want to give presentations at lodges, there are certain things you can start doing today that will put you on that course. If you want to start giving lectures and conferring degrees, there are certain things you can start doing today that will put you on course. And especially things like that, because people are starving for people that are able to do things like that at their lodge. Yeah, I was just thinking as you said that, because it was late last year, I went to a degree. And I'm there and I just got to that lodge and Austin White texted. He's like, hey, you'll be able to make it. I'm like, what are you talking about? I look at my calendar. There's nothing. And it's like, he had me booked to go talk at his lodge that night. And it wasn't even on my calendar. I was like, dude, I am sorry. I went last month, but it's like, dude, I am sorry. I don't know what happened. And then Monday when I was going to Salado, a brother called me. He's like, hey, are you going to make it to the stated meeting tonight? He's like, what stated meeting? It's like, oh, my lodge had a stated meeting. I don't even know how it was on my calendar. I don't even know how I did that. So no, that's what I'm saying. My calendar is on here. My stated meetings are on here. And I added the presentation to it also. It's like, how on earth did I double book that? But you're right. I mean, when I'm sitting there talking to people and they're like, hey, can you come talk there? And I'm looking at my calendar real quick. I'm like, yeah, we can work that out. But yeah.
Yeah, I can tell you if you're talking to me and you ask me about a certain date and I say, yes, that date's open, make sure that I put it in my calendar right then and there, because I won't be coming back to it. Once I leave the conversation with you, I'm probably going to have another conversation with somebody else right after, and that thought will be gone, gone for good. That's why when I'm sitting in lodge, the only time I have my phone out, I do not text people in lodge. The only time I have my phone out is to have my calendar out, put things in my calendar, and then it goes back put away. Otherwise, you know, I'm not going to have my phone out. But
I have a big calendar. I
that for personal experience for Dennis.
I forget who our company is.
And then I have the one on my phone, and like once a week, I'll look at the calendar on my phone and put my dates on the calendar in the kitchen. That's the only time I really look at it. So exactly like what you're talking about. Like if I say I'm going to do something, I'll add it there to my calendar, but I don't look at it again until I'm going and putting it on the big calendar so my wife knows what my week looks like.
Right. My wife still has a paper calendar too. We do the same thing. And I get so frustrated because she wants to go back over it and back over it. And it's like, girl, if you just sync up with my calendar, you'd be all right. She's not going to do it.
Well, this has been a very good conversation.
We didn't even get to justice. Just shut up, dude. I know where you're going right now, right this minute. I know what you're fixing to say. And no,
what?
It's not okay. We're not shutting it down. Anybody have final thoughts?
Doing nothing is an injustice.
That's exactly right.
And that's what you guys aren't doing. Y'all are doing a lot.
Well, appreciate that.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
We're trying real hard. So I'm going to jump into. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say Justin's doing a lot. I don't know about Dennis, but.
Womp, womp, womp.
Yeah. So justice. Justice. Not Justin. Justice. Justice is the feeling I get of a job well done, even though I haven't told anybody that was my work that made it happen, but, you know, still comes out. No, just kidding. Justice. It really is my favorite topic. It's one of the most important things that we can learn in masonry, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the end result of punishment inflicted by another person. Nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with the equalization of wrath, equalization of a situation based on the wrath of a governing body, if that makes sense, right? So it has nothing to do with the ladies and the judge at court that sentences somebody to 10 years in prison for whatever. That's not justice. Justice. Take away the ICE and just think about what's just. What's just and right. What's just and right is that which is balanced. That is just. That is what we're looking for. Equilibrium in all that we do. That's why we see that checkerboard floor right there, the black and the white. I know this one in my lodge is blue and white, but it's the black and white. Right? That is the most simple form of justice that you'll see in the lodge that we're reminded of in everything that we do. How do I wanna put this?
Just jump in, man.
Well, I'm trying to tie it in with what we've been talking about with the manifestation. But the reality is that we've already talked about every bit of it. Mm-hmm. And just not in direct terms. Go ahead. Because I drew a blank for some reason. I need to go get one of my papers.
So here's, I'll just look at my notes on it. I didn't reach quite the same conclusion, but I don't think they necessarily oppose each other either. I do have right here taken out of a Lightfoot monitor. Justice is that standard or boundary or right which enables us to render to every man his just due without distinction. This virtue is not only consistent with divine and human laws, but also the very cement and support of civil society. And as justice in a great measure constitutes the real good man, so it should be the invariable practice of every Mason never to deviate from the minutest principles thereof. Then I have my own notes here. It says it refers to giving every person what they are entitled to without any sort of discrimination. So justice occurs, and I feel like this is the balance right here. Justice occurs when somebody receives what they are owed, and injustice occurs when somebody is deprived of what they are due. So that's like what Brad was talking about. Like, if there is a reason why we often say that justice is blind, in the depictions of justice are blindfolded typically, because true justice cannot be delivered unless we are unbiased and do not allow our opinions or of a person to affect the outcome of the situation.
Right.
Leaving this place better than I found it. My lodge, my home, my family, the earth, you know, all of it. That's justice.
When we look at our lives and we look at our love and hate relationships within our lives, justice is the fact that our love is only ever going to be as strong as our strongest hate that we've ever experienced in our lives, right? In that particular measure. So you have to keep this within the right context. So, you know, when it comes to love with your spouse or with your kids or something like that, you're only going to understand and comprehend love as strong as you've ever understood and comprehended hate towards another human being. So when somebody dies, you're only going to hurt as bad as the equal and opposite amount of love that you had for that person, right? Mm-hmm. We all know that. We've been to funerals that we felt nothing about, and we've been to funerals we just couldn't stop crying. There's been moments in my life when it wasn't even the person that was close to me that passed away. It was the spouse of another, and it happened really recently. And I just couldn't stop crying all day for that person because I love him so much. As a brother, I loved him so much. And so the only way I'm able to experience that kind of love is because I've experienced that kind of hurt of loss in my life. I've experienced the hurt of the loss of somebody that special to me. So it immediately affected how I felt about his loss. So you're only able to feel an equal amount of the other. And it's that way with anything, right? It's that way with love, with hate, with joy, with sadness. It's all on degrees. And that's where we get into the Hermetic principle of it, is that it's all on a certain plane of degrees, to where the depth is only going to be the depth of one is only going to be as deep as the other. And so we have those notches in the degrees that we go along that determine all things. And that's justice. That's equilibrium. That's what we're striving for, is to understand where we are in that moment. Because if we understand where we are in that moment and why we are there, then we're able to control our own selves and our own emotions and our own reactions to actions, right? But when we don't understand those things, we tend to fly off the handle and do stupid things. Or like there's times when you're actually very scared for your kid, but you yell at them in an angry voice because you don't know how to handle the situation, because you don't understand where you are in the moment. So you blurred out in a way that you really didn't anticipate and really didn't mean. You were really scared, but you come out across, you come across angry because you don't really understand where you are in that moment. And I think that's injustice. When we treat ourselves, and don't get me wrong, not just others, but ourselves as well. When we treat ourselves and others poorly because we don't understand where we are in the moment, we're not present in the moment. And so we don't understand where we are. And that's the biggest injustice that we can have on ourselves and those around us.
That's interesting. Interesting perspective.
Took a minute, but I got there.
It was worth
it. It's worth it? Good. Cool. As long as it was worth it, that's all that matters. now you can say it. Okay. No.
Well, yeah, that's been a good episode.
I hope somebody has some thought on that.
Yeah.
I can't be the only one that ever spanked my kid out of fear and really regretted it later. This was 30 years ago, guys. I don't do it today.
Yeah. I've never got angry at my children and not regretted it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Never. Like I've never.
Because it's never angry. Yeah. It's never really anger, right? There's always something
fear or frustration or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Or displaced anger. I've noticed when I and again, if it's displaced on my behalf to my wife, because I'm frustrated over something that's going on in Lodge or whatever in my life, and I'm sharp with my wife, I notice that she gets sharp with my daughter. Displaced anger, because we don't understand why we're acting the way we are and why we are even in that moment. It just happened abruptly to her, and she abruptly gives it right back out to my daughter. And it's not intentional, and I don't fault her for what happens. We both need to work on ourselves, and I mean, we all ultimately have to, right? But I've noticed that that's also a chain reaction. That's why it's so important for us as leaders in our family and in our lodges and in our communities to have that composure and know where we are in life and be present in the moment. That's why it's so important.
But I think these are all why these cardinal virtues, these pivotal virtues are brought up at the EA degree. And I also think these are things we should consider, not to go into the Westgate too much, but these are things we should consider when we're investigating somebody to be a Freemason. Like, basically, will they be able to apply the lessons of these cardinal virtues to themselves? If they have no temperance, then they probably will not be able to apply temperance, right? If they have no fortitude, right? They have no resilience. That's not a good thing either. If they don't have justice, they allow biased opinions to affect their decisions, or if they just have no balance in their lives, like Dennis is talking about, or prudence, right? If they just make decisions based off a whim without actually looking at the actual facts and making decisions, if they seem incapable of doing these things, they might not be a good candidate for Freemasonry. And
yeah, if you stormed the Capitol because Donald Trump said to storm the Capitol, that's a problem. That's a problem. You will not be a good candidate for Freemason. Now, if you did if you did it because you believe that all of them are corrupt and they all got to go, I get it. Totally get it. That's well balanced. That's so bad. Dude, tee off the ship. Right. That's so bad that I just brought that up. But that's the reality, though. If you're quick to do something because somebody else said so or whatever, without having your own thought and personal investment in the reason that you do it, then you're not right for Freemasonry. We need people
that could apply to any party or any religion.
Oh yeah, that applies to anything in the world. That's just such an easy target that, you know, people with little minds like me can understand and get behind. So that's why I said that. Not because I believe in one party or another. I just want to throw it out there.
Yeah. So that said,
I think they're all idiots.
Now that Dennis has stirred the hornet's nest, let's
I know. Now that I've really done it. Let's close go this to the show. Comments.
Dear Butthead.
Right.
All right. Anyone have final thoughts? Brad, Josh, Oscar, the Daniel, or dad joke for the day? Anything at all?
No. That is not okay. That is not balanced. That is just purely on your part and feeds your funny bone. It does not feed mine.
I'll leave him on Facebook, Justin. If you want to DM, go over to Facebook.
You can give one if you've got one, but that's it, Justin.
What time do ducks wake up?
Okay.
At the quack of dawn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They sure do.
I knew it before you said it.
Dennis, you want me to go or do you want to go? Or
yeah, y'all go ahead.
I'll just say I really enjoy this esoteric dive with the EA. There's so much stuff that, I mean, we just talked about the cardinal virtues and whatever rabbit holes that led us down, but there's so much more that we can unpack. So we'll see what we're feeling next time, but the goal is to maybe go to Fellowcraft, and we can always, after we move past a few, we can always revisit specific things. So I want y'all and all the listeners to be mindful of certain topics that you might want to discuss. If nothing else, I'm up for turning this into like a book discussion, if nothing else. Like, we can Secret Teachers of All Ages or something, read a chapter and talk about it. That's all good stuff. But I'd like to keep this segment esoteric because I like the idea of deep diving into stuff, because I think there's a lot of brothers that I'm sure they get value from the more administrative topics we talk about. However, I'm sure they would just as much appreciate something more esoteric. And I think that's a well-balanced lodge would have something like the same approach. Like, we might talk about something administrative one month, and then the next month let's talk about something esoteric, and then another month we'll talk about something historic. Anything that provides value and helps you grow. So as it is right now, we're looking at the esoteric stuff. We're looking at highlighting lodges. And I mean, we'll still have our usual conversations too. So I enjoyed this. I'm excited for what value it's going to bring. And I appreciate all of y'all being here. And I guess I'll go ahead and plug, since I've been bad about it. These guys here, aside from Dennis, but Brad, Josh, Oscar, Daniel, these are all inner circle guys. And the invitation was extended to everybody else on the inner circle. So if you are interested in being involved in conversations like this with fine, upstanding gentlemen like this, then you need to hop on the inner circle, and the link will be below in the video description. This also gets you access to ad-free content. We did an exclusive inner circle dinner in January, which was fantastic. And there's other things like that that are coming up. I'm not going to pitch what is coming up, because a lot of people just join the inner circle to get in these things, and that's not what it's about. It's about receiving and providing value to inner circle members, and that being a way for us to say thank you. And so I'm just saying, if you want the possibility of future events, take that leap of faith, right? Because that's what we talked about, right? You want to manifest good things, you have to be willing to take that leap of faith.
Yeah.
And good things will come. But we're not gonna sell you on the inner circle based off things that are coming up, because that's not what it's about. But just know it's there.
Right. And that's something I was gonna say as well. You know, if you enjoyed this conversation and if you want to be a part of it, all you have to do is join at the very basic level to be able to be a part of it. So if this is your kind of thing that you really enjoy, then jump on, because this is the kind of thing that I like to share with our inner circle because they help balance us out. You know, Justin and I, we believe a lot of the same things, and I just say it a lot different than Justin does, and in more with a lot more words. I use my words
more eloquent.
Not eloquent. No. No. Just a lot more. But you know, so Justin and I, we share a lot of the same beliefs, though I did learn stuff tonight from Justin, you know, different thoughts on application, which is kind of cool. I like hearing different ways of applying the same knowledge to a thing, right? I think that the better we are at doing that, the better equipped we are to serve our listeners and serve the craft, because we all learn differently. And so if it were just me and Justin, we would only touch on this much of our listenership. But mm-hmm. because we have all of our inner circle here as well, the thoughts that they bring to the table, it also draws in, you know, the other 80% of our listenership. So if you find value in that and you want to be a part of it, it's what, $3 a month, $4 a month, something like that for the lowest level
is $1.99.
Oh my gosh.
And you're in.
That's just too damn cheap. We need to cut that one out. But
well, most people do the $5.99. That's the middle tier. Most people do the $5.99.
Right, because they find that kind of value out of what we're doing. Yeah. And that's just honor to us, right? You can start at the $2 level. I'm just joking. There's no shame in that, no harm in that. I want everybody to come on if they feel like coming on. But the reality is that most brothers find enough value out of it. It's usually the brothers that are paying that, except for not a brother. I feel like is a brother from another mother up in New York. He's been on the $25 train this whole time, and he just won't stop. He just loves it.
He's a Mason at heart. He just hadn't joined yet.
He definitely is. And he'll be coming down for the inner circle get together that we're going to have. He's planning to fly down and spend a week down here while we're doing that. So keep that in mind, inner circle members, as we're talking about all this. It seems like a big trip, but you know, there's some guys that just want to hang out with you guys in from other areas in the country, and they're going to fly in for this. So just keep that in mind. It's that
maybe,
special.
Maybe look at houses while they're down here too.
Yes. Hopefully. One of them is going to look at houses while he's down here and really become a Texan. He already looks like it. He already talks like it, acts like it. Now he just needs to dig in and just take the plunge and buy a piece of property.
There you go.
But anyways, this was a great show. I really enjoyed it. And we're going to have these as a separate segment so that people can go directly to these in the future and plug in and get some esoteric knowledge. I think that no matter what topics we talk on the 3 degrees, and that's what we're going to base this on, is the first 3 degrees. We say that everything in Masonry that needs to be said can be done in the first 3 degrees, and that's true. Mm-hmm. So, but they also intertwine. So no matter what degree we're in on, some of these values and esoteric talks, they bleed into each other. So
we started talking about the masters almost.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, part of what I'm going to be presenting is comes from one of the phrases from the French ritual that says, you know, are you a master Mason? I am. I have passed from the square to the compasses. Mm-hmm. And what that means is extremely important. But that happened the very moment you were introduced to Freemasonry in the first degree. It happens in all of the degrees, and it happens as a process through life, but that happened at the very beginning. In fact, it started happening before you ever knocked on the door. Before you ever asked anyone to become a Mason, that process started. So just a teaser out there. I'm going to pull you in like a crawdad. Like a crawdad on a piece of bacon. I'm going to pull you in. This is how we do it.
That, no one catches crawdads like that. That doesn't even work.
That's the only way I've ever done it. Yes, dude, it does. I just
scoop them up with buckets and look under rocks. The whole bacon on a string, that has never worked.
I will out-catch you 10 to 1. That's also how I'll go crabbing. We used to go crabbing as a kid down in Texas City. And instead of bacon, of course, we would tie up a chicken leg or a part of a chicken and throw it out. And the crabs would jump onto it. And then you start bringing it in. And by the time you get that chicken leg in, you have three crabs pulling on each other, trying to get to that chicken leg. And they don't want the other one to have it. So they're latched onto this crab. And you have three or four, and you got a little bushel of crab just from one little chicken leg.
Could just cook the chicken and eat that.
This is also how you milk a rabbit. You milk a rabbit with their little teats.
No, that's how you
milk a cat. You milk a cat with their little.
You never had badger milk? It's really good. All right. That means it's time to stop. So
later. We've gone way off there. We've gone off. Yeah. Take care. Keep it.